This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and thank you so much for joining me on Target. I am your host, Penny Wolfgang, and every week we try to talk about subjects that we think are interesting and important and topical and different subjects that you might, different places that you might want to know more about, different people that you might be interested in. And this is kind of a holiday-inspired program in a way, because I know that during this period of time, especially when the kids are off from school, you might be thinking, what can we do? You are thinking, if you have kids, you are definitely thinking, what am I going to do with them during all this time when there is a, you know, the holiday break from school? What activities can we go to, and what might be something that might be a little different and educational as well? And that's what made me think when I went to a STEM organization meeting. What was it called? The STEM meeting I went to.
It was the hub event.
The hub event for the STEM program, which we're going to talk about in a while, and of which the chairman was this beautiful, charming, intelligent person named Robin Wolfgang. So when I went there, they had a group of speakers about different organizations that were making a difference here in Western New York and that were involved with either science, technology, what's the E?
Engineering
and math, right?
Got it.
STEM. So that's the STEM. So in the studio with me today was one of the speakers who I was really impressed to learn about this organization and how it has changed the face of many ways of Niagara Falls and how interesting and also educational it might be. And it is the Aquarium of Niagara. And I notice it's called Aquarium of Niagara, not Niagara Falls. There's probably a reason. They want it to be more generic. And right, Gary?
You're right.
Okay, the studio. I just made a guess. In the studio, I'm kind of smart that way. In the studio with us is Gary K. Sedell, right?
That's right.
And Gary is the executive director of the Aquarium of Niagara. And I heard him speaking at the STEM, as obviously it would be something that would be, it would fill in a couple of those, you know, science and probably math, and I'm not sure of the others how it would fit. Engineering,
we'll find a way.
Maybe engineering to where they have the tanks and the air, and I don't know. I'm making it up, but anyway, in the studio with us is Gary, and the Aquarium of Niagara is probably, I learned, a very underrated cultural place that people could go to and really learn a lot about not just fish, but other animals that take place there and other events. Gary, help me out here.
Sure. Seals, okay, sea lions, penguins. We've got it all.
Okay. So now, first of all, how long has the aquarium been there, and has it changed from how it was in the old days to its present form?
Sure. So the aquarium actually opened in 1965. And in that year, a lot of really important history was made right in Niagara Falls. So the synthetic formula for fake seawater, or the formula that's used now in hobbyist aquariums around the world, was actually developed right at the Aquarium of Niagara. So there was a group of scientists that formed the organization. They refined that formula, and it was used in a number of the exhibits that were kind of displayed throughout the building. So as time's gone on, that formula got very popular. So it's been used since the 60s. And in terms of the change that we've gone through, being that the aquarium was the first place you could see synthetic seawater this far inland was very impressive for the 60s. So our annual attendance in those first few years was magnificent. And around 1970, we saw a peak at about 300,000 visitors. As time went on, there were some challenges, and those challenges came both in terms of financial and, you know, just some limitations in terms of growth and things like that. But I am excited to say that in the last few years, we have seen quite a bit of a renaissance, kind of bringing us back to the glory days of the 60s. In fact, this year, we just broke an annual attendance of 305,000 people, which is the most we've seen since 1970.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you pop champagne or have a celebration when the person walked in? Did you give them a balloon and say, "Oh, you are the 500th whatever?"
Maybe no. Not in front of the sea lions, but
No. So, I just wanted to go back to something you said. Probably the water was developed that would be a logical place because of the something to do with Niagara Falls.
Sure. You know, I'm not sure, you know, where the original founders and chemists that prepared the original formula came from, but water has always been such an important part of the city of Niagara Falls. You know, obviously that's where it got its name from. So, you know, it's been an important location in terms of that. So, you know, to be able to bring it back to its history and have such an important tie-in in terms of science, we're very proud of that.
Now, what is, explain, maybe people don't know what an aquarium is in general, besides, I think, in my mind, it's like fish. I don't know. Things that float, things that can swim?
Sure. So some aquariums, of course, do display a high volume of fish and a variety of different species in that regard. But we are fortunate in that we've been able to take that and expand into seals, sea lions, penguins. So a lot of those animals actually tend to be our more popular species and exhibits that we have at the aquarium. So among our collection, we have 120 different species of fish. So we have a number, and that does, of course, include our sharks. So we're really excited to be able to display that.
Your what?
We have sharks. We do have sharks.
Seriously?
We do, of
Seriously?
Course. Black-tipped reef sharks and bamboo sharks.
Okay. All right. I'm listening.
They're not as scary as Jaws, though. In fact, they're pretty sleek-looking animals.
All right. How are they? Well, I keep going. What else is there that I missed?
You know, what a lot of people don't realize is that the majority of our collection is non-releasable or rescued animals. So our seals and sea lions are placed under a directive from the United States government. So we're kind of known for, in the industry, for taking on these difficult cases. So animals that are rescued for some reason and can't be released back to the wild, we'll provide a permanent home to those animals. So that comes in the form of animals with amputations, visual impairments, seizure conditions. So we've taken on a number of these cases over the years, and our organization has really come to be known for our ability to care for those more difficult cases.
Wow, that is impressive. So you kind of read my mind. How do you get a shark or a seal to be in the Niagara Aquarium? Where does it come from and how do you get it there?
So they come from a variety of different sources. So of course the rescued animals, when they are first brought in, the first attempt is to rehabilitate them and release them. But that's not always possible for a variety of reasons. Again, animals with physical impairments, of course, can't swim fast enough to catch their food. Animals with visual impairments can't see their food or evade their predators. So at that point, the rescue centers will actually make a recommendation to the United States government for placement. At that point, they'll work through a list of facilities that are potential, so they serve as kind of a matchmaker for zoos and aquariums. So they'll look to place these animals in locations that can provide suitable housing in the long term for them, and they'll reach out and over the period of several months, make those decisions. So that's really where our seals and sea lions come from. We have a number of corals and fish that were actually confiscations at the border. So we'll get a phone call from U.S. Customs and Border Protection with people trying to smuggle all sorts of things into our fine country. And we'll get a call and provide housing for those animals as well.
What is the definition? I was being like kind of silly, saying it has to swim or float or something. What's the definition of an animal that would be in an aquarium?
So what we look at is from an environmental perspective, you know, what types of groups do we want to focus on? So we've obviously chosen the aquatic world. So that takes the form of marine mammals, invertebrates, fish, so all sorts of things like that. We obviously are very friendly with the Buffalo Zoo and have found great partnership in interactions at the professional level there. So we've allowed them to take on more of the terrestrial taxon groups, and we've decided to focus on things that like to get wet.
There you go. That was what I was looking for, things that like to go to get wet. Okay, yeah. Who is who works in an aquarium? Like what is the training and what is the background of the people that run it, besides you?
Sure, that's one of my favorite questions. So I actually came up through the ranks of our zoological department. So as much as I've enjoyed my time as the executive director, I've spent most of my years in a wetsuit and running around the aquarium taking care of the animals. So the background of people that we choose to select for those positions are usually oriented towards either psychology because of the tie-ins to animal behavior or biology, which tends to be more focused on the ability to sustain life in environments for these animals. So one of the things that surprised most people is when we respond and say psychology is a perfectly acceptable degree.
Yeah, I'm surprised because there is psychology to a goldfish or to a whale or to what you have to understand their thinking. First of all, I didn't know they had thinking. And
of
second,
course.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Sure. So psychology is so important to working with these animals. We work with them cooperatively for their proactive health care and well-being. So all of those concepts of positive reinforcement and operant conditioning tie directly into allowing us to take the best possible care of our animals. So let's take a blood draw, for example. You know, if you think about even taking a child or a dog to the vet and they go in and there's a lot of anxiety, they are ultimately able to collect a blood sample, but there's a lot of stress associated with that. Now, let's pretend that that child or that dog weighs 250 pounds and they have the bite pressure of a pit bull and they've got these flippers and muscle in their necks. That's really complicated. So what we've decided to do is proactively train those behaviors so the animal simply will lay down, present us one of their flippers, we can take a blood sample, and you bet they get lots of fish for it after they do a great job.
I was going to say, I wish I was there to hear the the conversation that's taking place between you and Flipper or whoever's talking. I just want to tell you, today we're talking about the Aquarium of Niagara with Gary K. Sedale, who is the executive director and who has worked his way up, as we just heard, from being very familiar with the operation to being the executive director, be actually hands-on, right? Is that
that's
what
right.
How you would call it?
Sure.
I can understand biology, too, and why this would be a very educational place for people who aren't interested in science or biology, right?
That's right. So our organization really fills a variety of roles for particularly the city of Niagara Falls. So we serve as a center for education. We serve as a destination for families of Western New York who are looking for a day out, who are looking for maybe a warm place to go this time of year. And we also serve as a tourist destination. So a lot of the way we've been trying to poise ourselves in the community in the recent years has been to show that we can really fill all of those niches quite well. So for the families that are interested in bringing their kids out for an afternoon, maybe they come into the aquarium and they catch a few minutes of our sea lion show. Well, one of the things that I believe fully in is this idea of education through inspiration. So in other words, you come to the aquarium and you catch a few minutes of that sea lion show. Well, maybe you watch a sea lion do a big backflip out of the water and some of that salt water sprays onto the face of your family. Well, what you are likely to pick up on there is sea lions are fast, they're flexible, and they're really athletic. So that ties into that's how they get away from their predators like sharks and killer whales. So I've always seen the opportunity to come to the aquarium, see something really exciting like that, and tie it back to something educational is just such an important part of what we do.
In a way, I'm glad we talked about this because in my mind, I guess I'm thinking of the quote-unquote olden days of an aquarium where you would just be looking through a glass and see fish. I don't think I ever saw a shark or a seal, but fish. Like this would be in New York, which is probably the biggest aquarium in the country.
One of the bigger ones.
But I don't remember anything other than, you know, a field trip and educationally looking, there's a fish, I don't know, maybe they had porpoises. I don't remember what, because it's too long ago. But on the other hand, the new theory and the one that you're operating on and that you're describing to us is more the basis of education and probably more interactive.
You're exactly right. So one of the things we've tried to do is make it really easy for people to connect with our mission. It's no secret that we live in the day and age of hands-on experiences being some of the most impactful experiences that can be offered. So I'll take you to the example of one of our touch tank programs, which is something that's offered through our birthday parties, sleepovers, and even field trips. So we'll get a whole group of kids that come in and they see all these crabs, they see these sea stars crawling around the bottom of the exhibit, and they can't wait to put their hands in the water. So of course, they do, and the first thing they do is pull their hands right back out because the water is 52 degrees. So one of the things that they learn from that is not only about the animals and their physiology, but they live in really cold water. And what does that mean if the water changes over time? What does that mean if the ocean temperature rises or drops? And with the kids having the experience to put their hands in the water and realize how that infects the animals and how important it is to have stable environments for them, that's a great takeaway message for them. So giving them that hands-on chance is not something they have to do in the classroom, but rather an experience that our organization can supply for them.
And do children? Do you have tour, like educational tours? Or I'm talking about school now. We'll talk about the tourists in a minute, but I want to talk about the schools during school year. Is it a place that you would? I just remembered the field trip I just mentioned to you. Could they come on field trips and somebody sure. will talk to them and show them around and educate them?
That's right. So we see about 35,000 students a year, and if you do the math on that, we have over 300,000 visitors. 35,000 of them are students. That's a number we're incredibly proud of, and we really see ourselves in a role of being able to aid educators, teachers in the fulfillment of some of those STEM requirements. So there's certainly a classroom experience that is important and valuable, but we see our organization as a great way of supplementing that, getting the kids out and hopefully meeting some of those requirements that make the lives of our educators and teachers easier.
And probably there's something for at every age. I mean, depending on the level, you can, whether it be like the littlest kindergarten up to maybe high school, learning more of the technical aspects.
You're right. And of course, I'm biased because I pretty much grew up at the aquarium, but we do offer a variety of experiences. So they start at the preschool level. We've even had some toddler level programs, and they go straight up through high school, college. So we don't stop with our partnerships when people reach to a certain age. We work very closely with a number of the colleges and universities in the area to do research studies, to observe animal behavior, and provide us a lot of important insights there. And of course, just because you're an adult doesn't mean you can't have fun at the aquarium. But, you know, that comes in a variety of forms, being able to enjoy it with your children, being able to take home a message to your families, and maybe even understand a little bit better about making smart seafood choices at the grocery store or the supermarket. We do a lot of work advocating for sustainable seafood sources. So that's an important part of what we do, is educating public from all ages, from, you know, basically a child age right through the adult years.
Well, I was thinking career-wise, and you would know more but than I, and we could describe it, but there's such a thing, I know, as courses as marine biology that might have something to do with it. And what else would people study and be able to use as in their future?
And, you know, anytime I hear marine biologist, I automatically think of a Seinfeld quote that must tie into one of those episodes there. But, you know, for us, marine biologists are people who really have a good understanding of the ecosystem. So when you go to school in marine biology, of course, a career path in the aquarium world is an option to you, but there's all sorts of great work happening out on the coastline. So marine biologists will oftentimes take the course of being on a research vessel, you know, chartering the course along the coastlines, being out on one of the Great Lakes. So there's a lot of roles that those marine biologists play in terms of the world as a big picture. But one of the things that I think we're most proud of being able to do is be a source of inspiration for that. So not everyone that comes to the aquarium wants to work with dolphins or to, you know, feed a shark on a platform, but they may be interested in understanding a little bit more about how those ecosystems function in the wild and the different threats and challenges that they face.
Where do you get, let's talk a little bit about how much it costs and how to run an aquarium like this. You know, they get the supplies, get the animals. There's just a lot more involved.
Absolutely. So expensive is a great way to describe running an aquarium. There's a reason that they are not for-profit institutions. So our organization runs on just a little bit shy of a $3 million operating budget. And a lot of those expenses are orientated towards zoological care. So that's exactly what you were asking in terms of the expenses that go into feeding the animals, you know, all of the medication and vitamins that go into caring for the animals. And for anyone that goes out to dinner and orders seafood, you know what you're paying for those plates. Now imagine feeding 35,000 pounds of seafood to the animals at the aquarium every year. So those expenses are pretty significant. We have two wonderful veterinarians. We have a team of animal care staff that do a tremendous job on a daily basis. They're there 365 days a year. The animals never go hungry, that's for sure. But there's a lot of expenses in that sense. You know, you look at just treating the water, the cost of turning lights on for all of these exhibits. And, you know, you have to imagine that some of these exhibits require anywhere between, you know, 30 and 50 individual light bulbs just to provide the proper housing conditions. So there's a lot of expenses that go into that.
And is it, you said it's not for profit, but what's the relationship with the city, the state, the donors, that kind of thing?
You know, that's an area we're really looking to grow and develop. The state's been very generous with us in the recent few years here, making contributions to some of our larger exhibits and projects. And we do receive a very small portion of our annual operating budget in the form of a fund from the state. And we've worked very hard to get Niagara County involved and on board with what the aquarium's doing. We've seen a lot of support in two of our recent projects that we've been able to start at the aquarium. And certainly the city had a role in providing some funding for our penguin exhibit.
What were the two projects?
So the one that we just opened in March was our penguin exhibit. So that was a 3.5...
Oh, and you mentioned that. I'm so glad you got back to that. Penguin?
Penguins, yes. And I have to admit, they are by far the worst smelling animals in that whole building.
Oh, we're sorry. I hope they're not listening.
I hope not.
Be insulted.
But we do have penguins, so we opened that exhibit in March of this past year, and then this spring, we are excited to be opening a jellyfish gallery.
So I wanted you to talk about that, because at the STEM fair, you talked about it, and I thought, oh, he's really excited about something which, I don't know, most people are like, yo, yuck, I try not to step on them when you're in Florida on the beach, you know, that kind of thing.
And that is the experience that most people have with them. But what we would like to do is create an experience where you can appreciate just how beautiful they are. You know, these animals move through the water in a way like you can't imagine. It's like this eloquent little dance. So we're going to be bringing them in. We're going to be showcasing them in a light that most people have not been able to enjoy them, because you've either been stung by one or you've been told not to step on one. But when you actually look at these animals and understand the physiology behind them and the role they play in the environment, it's pretty incredible.
Now, to go back to the penguin or the jellyfish, are they in tanks? I can't imagine how a penguin is not just walking on the land.
So the penguin, you know, we like to use the word habitat, right? So in this day and age, it's really important that we try and create the most naturalistic experience that we can for these animals. So our penguins, and I assure you, we spent a lot of money to make sure they felt like they were on the coast of Peru or Chile. But we've really done a lot of work to make these environments as natural as possible. That includes cutting a hole in the roof of the aquarium to make sure there was a skylight. So there's natural light in there. There's artificial rock work that was actually designed to mimic exactly what you'd see on the South American coastline. So we spend a lot of work doing that. So when you come to the aquarium, you know, we've really tried to get away from the idea that, you know, you go in and there's an animal in a cage or an animal in a tank. That's just simply not the way things are done anymore. So we've worked very hard in terms of our collection planning to make sure all of those exhibits are as modern as possible and almost take you out of Western New York and make you feel like, even if it's just for a few seconds before you go back outside and freeze, you know, you took a trip down to South America or to California.
That's why I said at the top that this would be a great activity for families to participate in during their winter recess, right? Because, like
That's
you
right.
said, it's inside, so there's that. And it's interactive, and they'll learn something. And plus the fact that, as you said, you kind of made it like, we're not in Buffalo anymore. We're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, if you haven't been to the aquarium in a while, it's a really good time to come and visit. So for a number of years, we were challenged financially and with, soliciting support from the area. But in the recent years, we've been able to really turn the tides on that. So we've been able to refurbish and refresh our entire first floor gallery. We've been able to introduce multiple new exhibits. I've heard time and time again that, you know, it's like a new aquarium. And that's something we're very proud of.
What is the nearest other aquarium? Is there one in Buffalo?
There is not one in Buffalo.
I didn't think so.
You'd be driving about 250 miles to see the nearest aquarium.
So that's really good. I mean, you're a tourist attraction that the area can be proud of, not just Niagara Falls, which
that's
is
right.
why you call it Aquarium of Niagara. I didn't ask a sensible question, which is, where is the aquarium located? And when I know you mentioned that you had to feed the animals 365 days a year, but I hope it's not open 365 days a year.
We're open just about 365 days a year, just not Thanksgiving and Christmas. But the rest of the year, you can come and visit us. We open at 9 o'clock daily. We like to keep that very consistent for folks, so they really have a good sense of when they have access to us. We are located right down in Niagara Falls, actually right across from a lot of renovations that are happening in the area with the removal of the Robert Moses Parkway. But we are just a little bit outside of the downtown district, but right along the gorge. So it's a relatively easy easy to access location right now, and we'll be getting quite the big property upgrade when the parkway comes out.
And it's a freestanding building, and there's, I'm sure, right?
You're
signs.
Right. You're right.
I was there. And actually, you mentioned something which we should tell our listeners again. It's available for like birthday party or
sleepovers.
A prom or a sleepover. I don't know.
Corporate events. We do
Is
it all.
Is that right? Really?
Yeah. So, you know, we've recently taken on this opportunity to hold different meetings and events. So we have a program where you can hold a meeting there, a breakfast, a reception. We've seen weddings there. Really, I've seen it all. And now that the facility has been upgraded to a level that is, you know, a lot more consistent with what you'd expect to see at this kind of venue, it's a good opportunity for people to check it out and consider booking an event with us.
And there's food available. I mean, there's a way you could get catering
is
there food there, like a cafeteria or some kind of a stand or something?
We don't have
available?
A concession service on site, but we do work with a number of caterers and can certainly recommend some
and
great
I'm sorry
options.
To say, probably making a wild guess, but you do not serve fish?
No, we can't eat our coworkers.
Okay, all right. So thank you so much. You got me saying it. Thank you so much, Gary Sedell from the Aquarium. And also, is there a a website you want to throw
That's
that
right.
out there
so
too?
Visit us online. You know, it's aquariumofniagara.org, easy to remember. And of course, all of our social media platforms will keep you up to date with the most current information.
Okay, thanks again. Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation today. We've been talking about the Aquarium of Niagara with the Executive Director, Gary Sedell. And I thought it was interesting, as I said, around this time of year that we could introduce you to a place that you might not be that familiar with, or that you might have forgotten about, that you could have and take in while you're on vacation or anytime, because they're open all year round, as we said. Thanks for coming. Thanks for listening. Join me again next week. Have a good week, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.